Welcome to Season 2 of Beyond the Wall, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast brought to you by Istral and Darknotch. We'd like to thank FFG and CardGameDB for their continued support, and the fantastic AGOT community as a whole for being the sole reason we do this cast. Thank you for letting us take you once again beyond the wall.
Welcome to another episode of Beyond the Wall. Today we're going to have a little bit of an intro, some news, including a ton of SC results. Then we're going to have an interview with Bill, who is the architect behind the new crazy spreadsheet, which will make Alex super happy. And then we'll talk with someone who won a tournament with a Lufin apart. And then we're going to talk a little bit with Ingrid about her upcoming tournament, and then some closing comments.
Episode 3, John, and we have a ton of news to go through. This has been... I mean, last week we missed out on news because we recorded on Friday, so we didn't get a chance to cover the weekend's tournaments, and then we've obviously got a ton of stuff happen this weekend. Want to start us off?
Yeah, I mean, there was some spoilers that came up on that other podcast, but you don't want to listen to that anyways.
Well, they weren't very good cards anyway. Speaking of other podcasts, though, and this may not be relevant to a lot of you, but if you like to hear interviews with developers, both Cardboard of the Rings and Grey Company had interviews with their lead designers, lead developers, so that's Caleb and Matt Newman. And there's a lot of content there that sort of does talk about Thrones, or not about Thrones directly, but about card design and things like that that can be quite interesting. There were also two gems. One was Caleb saying that everyone at FFG hates Errata, which makes me happy. And the other was Caleb saying that Game of Thrones is his competitive LCG of choice, which I did not know, so that's kind of neat.
There was a bunch of tournaments over the weekend. We had the Unrestricted Tournament, where people were running a lot of shenanigans with Narrow Escape and Jack and Agar. I'm not sure how many people actually came to that. How many people, Alex?
It was a fairly small turnout, but I don't think we saw any of the apocalyptic stuff we were predicting with, you know, infinite loops and things. There was a gentleman's agreement not to play it. But, yeah, Narrow Escape with no Errata is crazy.
Yeah.
Because it's been errated twice, you know, to only work from cards discarded from play and things like that. So you can do some really strange with that.
Discard your hand and then Narrow Escape.
Yeah. But I think that was won by a Lanny TLV, just a Lannister good stuff. The Jack was, he built a deck with all the Lannister restricteds and he was at 76 cards and he said, well, let's make this TLV. And I think he draw capped every round of every game. So Lanny good stuff.
Then we had a bunch of tournaments. We had Ottawa, which I won with a Lufa Apart Martell. We had Boston, the Winds of Winter, where Dennis won with a Lannister No Agenda. We had
Edinburgh. Yeah, Edinburgh. I was just afraid you were going to mispronounce that.
It would have happened.
Yeah. It would have happened. So that was won by a Barra Maesters. I mean, most of these entries are coming straight into the annals without me asking. I think there have been 10 or 15 entries into the annals in the last 2 weeks. I haven't pestered anyone, which I know is hard to believe. Actually, I might have pestered someone, but details. I think I pestered John, actually. Madison, Wisconsin had a Martell No Agenda with Venomous Blade win, and North Carolina had a Martell Dark Wings, Dark Words. So that's from last weekend. That's all the results we couldn't cover last week.
This week we had the French big tournament, the Field of Fire, where we had a Lannister Dark Wings, Dark Words win.
So I was a little surprised to see Lanny Dark Wings, Dark Words do so well, because there are basically only two builds I know of. One is Negotiations and one is the Rivers. And both of those should be hit fairly hard by the Green Seers that we're seeing a ton of right now. Do you have any idea how it managed to climb to the top? Did it just get lucky, or was it running a different plot deck?
No, from what I heard, it was running Negotiations, but I haven't seen the list at all, and that's just secondhand information, so I don't know if it's right.
I guess that's not as bad as the Rivers, which are easier to use the Ravens on.
It's very predictable, right? The Rivers are like, one more turn till I do my big draw.
Yeah. Well, you're not certain you're going to see Negotiations and you don't know which turn, and if they're hitting you with some claim two, you might lose it to discard.
Well, this is it. This is the big thing with the Negotiations, that you can actually have a real plot deck with a little bit higher claim.
Mm-hmm. That was a Dutch player again. So I know we'd mentioned on the cast that this was a real meta and we were going to see it again. And sure enough, we have.
Yeah, we had the Windy City Tournament Cup, which was Stark Siege.
We had a really interesting tournament in SoCal, or Southern California. So this has happened every year for the last couple of years. Ryan Jones organizes this, and he sets it up so it's this sort of team format, so the you're broken down into teams all playing the same house, and whichever house gets the most wins. So it's a little bit different, and we're going to have him on in the next couple of weeks to talk about this tournament in general. But I heard the story, the finale. So a Lannister Power Behind the Throne that credits you entirely with its deck, the Gen Con deck. It's basically a copy of that or a close copy.
I wouldn't say that. I mean, John White is a great player. He changed up the deck. He played it a lot. I know that he took like 10 or 12 cards out. When you take 10 or 12 cards out, it's your deck.
That's right.
So but, congratulations, John. One of the great things was that John wore a little bit of Canadian apparel throughout the tournament. So
credit where credit's due.
We appreciate that, John. I think it was a Canadian World Baseball Classic jersey.
Wait, Canada plays baseball?
In 2006, supposedly we were good.
Did you hear about the final play? So apparently in the last matchup, so he'd gone undefeated, he wound up playing a cold hands on his own Tywin and his opponent's Mel, and his Cersei that had been Mel's favored.
Mm-hmm.
Puts them off to an aftermath turn, gets rid of cold hands to bring both of those characters back on his side, and then closes for the win. What a play.
That's what I'm talking about. That is a strong play.
I mean, that's a lot of fun. Yeah, I like that a lot. What else did we have this weekend, John?
We had an SC in London. I think they had 16 people in a Barra No Agenda one, played by James.
Yeah,
James,
friend of the show.
Barra No Agenda.
To be fair, he was not playing the Val version that was so popular last year. He was playing the Narrow Escape. Which,
so he changed it up.
Yeah, I think he was using Sam for draw, and there are a lot of people using Greenseer's Ravens and Sam. And your own Sam will key off your opponents. So it's a pretty good meta call right now. I like that as a draw engine.
There was a Tulsa original. I think it was Lenny Knights of the Realm that won with Preston as this restricted.
Yeah, that was Jacob Kern. We also, I mean, again, we're running through this really fast, but we don't need too much of your time. A lot of these are in the annals, so you can check them out for the full standings. But we had a tournament in Brisbane in Australia, and that was won by a Martel No Agenda. Manchester in the UK was a Stark Knights Watch, but that was a very small field, I think 6 players. So I don't know. I mean, it's possible there's a Stark Knights Watch deck out there. Don't get me wrong. I just haven't seen it yet. And what else?
Michigan had a Stark NA, Muir Reed, Jason won, and then Gatineau, which is pretty close to me, but I wasn't able to make it out, was won by Peter Wilson from Montreal, running a Martel Kings of Summer Vipers Bannerman. Maybe after playing me, he decided to try out the Martel deck.
See, it's right on your front door, and you don't go, and then Montreal wins. What have you done, John?
My wife's sick. My kids are sick. Yeah,
Your hand was forced.
That's it. I'm staying home.
I wanted to mention something that someone just linked to me today. So I'd mentioned in our first cast this season that there had been a petition circulating, a sort of open letter to FFG from the Star Wars LCG community about product delays, about long lead times for spoilers, things like that. And they actually got through and got an interview with the Senior Vice President of Communication, which I think is Steve Horvath.
Vice President of Communication.
Yeah, anyway. So I'll post a link to the reply. Honestly, it mostly looked like appeasement. You know, we know that certain things are wrong. We're going to do better. Here are a few tidbits of information. But there are a few tidbits of information that are relevant to Thrones and to organized play in general. So I'm definitely going to link that. But don't expect too much content. I think this is mostly, you know, a little bit of an appeasement to some people that are upset. anything else you got, John?
Not for tournaments, but news in general. Nothing for me. How about you, Alex?
Well, I think we've been through that stuff. I'm just trying to think whether we've missed. No, I did have a 2.0 idea that I wanted to share with the cast, though.
So I'm always interested in that.
I was chatting with a bunch of people in the Skype group, which if you're not familiar with, you should be. We often mention it on the cast, but we haven't this season, so I will include a link to that as well. But someone had made some joke about 2.0, and I decided that the rules guide for Game of Thrones 2.0 should have a Moribund entry that has some, like, joke reference of, you know, why would you even look this up? Go away, you horrible person. I think I would enjoy that.
Yes, you would. The rest of us,
yeah,
we're unsure. Inside jokes don't do well in new games.
I appreciate them. All right, so we're joined today by one of our rare guests from south of the equator, but in this case, you're from Australia, but not from anywhere any of our previous guests have been from. You're from Perth, is that right?
Yep, I'm from Perth.
That's pretty much as far from civilization as you can be.
We're pretty uncivilized here, I'll tell you that.
And our guest's name is Bill. Some people just call him the spreadsheet, you know, so...
This is how names get started. John just says that some people call a certain someone something. And apparently it sticks. John has too much influence.
No, I'm telling you, some people call him the spreadsheet. I mean, some people might be me, could be me and one other person, but that's people, I think.
So I didn't even realize there was a meta in Western Australia.
You could call it that. It's pretty dead at the moment in that I think me still playing by myself.
So you don't get much of a chance to play locally? Is this because your meta has somewhat disappeared or because you're still anticipating the surgence, if not resurgence, of a local meta?
Most of the people that I'm playing with at the moment, they're on holiday or doing other things, and I haven't had that much time myself to play. But I'd say there was only probably, say, 10 people playing at the local Good Games. Oh, yeah. If anybody listening to this is in Perth and plays Thrones, hit me up.
And how would they get in touch with you?
Just on the thread on CardGameDB, I guess. Bill Seaworth.
Speaking of that thread, probably the main reason that I wanted to bring you onto the cast.
Wait, before we start
talking. You didn't
talking
just about want this, to like, talk?
I need to get my splash suit on. I think there is a geeky, like, spreadsheet math explosion about to happen. So, okay, I'm ready now.
I can contain myself. It's been since mid-December, so my excitement may not have waned, but at least the explosiveness of it has somewhat diminished. I had posted on the Beyond the Wall Facebook group that, you know, I had received a great Christmas present, which was a new Game of Thrones spreadsheet. And so you are the designer, the developer and the curator.
Yeah, it's all me.
So what started this idea? How did you decide that spreadsheets and thrones go well together?
Basically, I wanted to get a deck list.
Man, I was really hoping that there'd be some flattery there. Like, there's this thing called the Annals, and it really inspired... Oh, all right.
I'll get to it. I started playing with a group of my friends, and I wasn't really building any fancy decks or anything like that. I was just playing with the cards that I had with a small pool. And I wanted to build more decks, but I found I didn't want to have to go to CardGameDB or Aggot Cards and type in a full deck list every time I made a change to my deck. So what I started doing is I just started writing out my deck list in Excel. And then I kind of get too into things, I'll admit. If you've seen the spreadsheet, you'll know. And once I had this framework, that ultimately what I wanted to do was I wanted to get a deck list that would count all the particular types of cards that I'd be interested in. Like, the main deck that I play is Barrow Knights of the Realm. And obviously, if you've played a Knights deck, you don't want to have to be counting. You got to know how many Knights you've got in your deck. And particularly when you're working on cost curves and things, you don't want all your knights to be in the three cost slot, so you gotta figure all this out. So then I figured, why don't I just let Excel do all the counting for me? And the spreadsheet was born.
You've since published this and released this to the general populace. Do you think most people are counting knights with it, or what is its purpose now compared to what its purpose used to be?
Well, originally I made it pretty much for myself, and I'm just lazy and don't like counting cards, and I wanted to make a better deck without having to count everything 20 times. And then I thought of the Mad Huntsman's setup analyzer, and I was using that at the time, and then I realized I don't really want to have to count all my cards to figure out what numbers I need to put in. So I thought if I could...
Why retype when you can just get it to automate right in the same sheet that you're already using? That's what basically you were thinking, I guess, eh?
Well, this is, it's a good place to start because we featured the setup analyzer on our cast, and a lot of people were introduced to it thanks to us. And one of our biggest complaints, it's an excellent tool, and it's nice that it runs like that, because in Excel you're limited to a certain number of simulations or it'll slow down too much while the scripting can work better. But really, recopying your deck into it and every time you change something in your deck having to redo it is a nuisance. And when we introduced the tool, what we had to spend the most time explaining was how to enter something, how to copy a deck into there, because it's not immediately intuitive. So working from a deck list, to me, this, when you first contacted me about this spreadsheet, this was the biggest appeal for me, is the fact that I'm constantly checking that kind of math on a deck, and not having to constantly retype it into the setup analyzer sounded like a pretty good idea.
Yeah, I'm just kind of lazy, and I don't really have that much time to play overall. And I'd say my favorite part of the game is deck building, but I definitely spend a lot of time deck building compared to actually playing. So getting it all automated with Excel was my main focus.
How much time did you invest in creating this sheet?
How much time? Probably too much time. Well, definitely too much time. I'd probably say I started it in about halfway through 2014. I'd do a little bit one day and then I'd leave it for a week. But I've probably spent more time going back and making it easier to use, mainly. I think it's pretty good as it is now, but I think the biggest resistance to using it would be it's kind of complicated. First time you use it, but I probably spent about, I don't know, thousands of hours on it.
Isn't that the general concise sort of thing? Like where you say, I've got this problem that, you know, every time I have to write out a deck list, this is a nuisance, and it's going to cost me about 50 hours over the next 2 years. But I could write a script that will fix this in an hour.
It'll take me 300 hours.
Exactly.
I've definitely saved that time if I were to build, like, I don't know, 400 more decks. But, yeah.
So you mentioned that it can be a little bit tricky to use. I'm wondering if you're willing to sort of walk us through a use so that listeners can get a little more familiar with the process and some of the stats that you can pull out of this and how to get that information out of the spreadsheet.
I'll be happy to do that. I think, obviously, not everybody listening to this right now will have access to a computer, so I'll try and be as broad as possible.
But have a little video I saw because I watched it.
That was another...
The little GIF, that's right, yeah.
GIFs are obviously the greatest thing on the internet. So
only if they have cats in them. I think I've copped to that.
There's no cats in this GIF, sorry.
It shows you how to cut and paste your exported deck file into the Excel sheet, and then how to populate some of the other sheets in order for you to start, you know, being able to take a look at your deck.
Yeah.
I know you have instructions here, instructions for importing on the very first sheet, which I think is a good place for those to be. So I've gone ahead and I've taken a .oad file I exported from AGOT cards. I pasted it over into Table 5, which gives me this nice list that I can copy into the deck import. I've then copied Table 2 just by your instructions, and now I have a deck over on the second sheet. So from that stage, what kind of information do I have access to? What kind of information is useful? And what kind of stuff do you use it for at this point once you've imported the deck list?
From the first tab, you then copy it following the instructions to the second tab. And the reason for that is you can start off with a deck, and I wanted a way that you can then go back and easily change the deck. So instead of having to
reinvent it again and again. So.
Yeah, without having to re-enter things. Basically, I know everybody's lazy, so I try to make it easier for everyone. On the second tab, the deck tab, I've got a particular options if it's your Castle Dreams location or if it's a Maester Chang for the Maester's Path, things like that. Also on that page, you can... If you enter in your agenda and your house, and if it's a Joust deck or a Melee deck, it'll automatically find your restricted card, which I think is fairly useful.
What would happen if I had two restricted? Would it throw me an error of some kind?
It'll point out that you've got two restricted cards, or if you've got no restricted cards.
Yeah, it says deck state is illegal, right? And then you can click that link and it'll take you to the sheet that tells you why.
Deck status as well will also factor in if you don't have enough cards for your deck. So I factored in if you need more cards for Dark Wings, Dark Waves, or whatever, or the Long Voyage.
If you're running Betrayal at the Wall, it takes account of that as well, as seen. So that it allows 8 plots if you're running Betrayal, but not otherwise.
The deck status, it basically gives you your deck legality, so it'll factor in the number of cards you've got and the number of plots that you've got and whatever you've got in your deck that'll then modify it, say agendas or whatnot.
That's another cool feature. The City of Shadows and see whether you actually got the House X only restrictions.
I'm actually, way to point out faults with the sheet, but I'm pretty sure I factored in City of Shadows. I factored in every other agenda. Speaking of factoring in agendas, if you say you're running a Night's Watch deck, it'll actually factor in the gained abilities of if you get extra icons or if it's a wildling deck, it'll factor in if you've gained plus one strength or stealth, and similarly it'll factor in if your agenda gives you prized or not. So I've kind of taken what the Card Game DB deck builder already does and kind of just gone on to the next step.
So from the second sheet then, I have always skipped right ahead to sheets 4 and 5. I haven't looked at Pool and Search. In fact, I have no idea what Pool and Search does. You want to tell me what it is for?
Originally, I didn't want to make a deck builder because we already have two main deck builders. But the Pool and Search tab, pool referring to card pool, it's a more advanced card search than what the current deck builders can do, in that I factored in kind of more specific information, like I factored in keywords, traits, if the card provides economy or not, if the card has an influence cost, naval icons are factored in. I don't think you can do that on AGOT cards.
No.
And I've also factored in things like seasons and card advantage to cards. So on that page, you can type a few things in. If you've got a deck and you need more cards, you can say, we've got a Baratheon deck, I can put in Baratheon, I need another character, I've got I need card advantage. You can set card advantage to yes, and it'll give you all the applicable cards in that list. So the other thing with the Pool and Search tab is, related to other parts of the sheet, it'll give you the probability of drawing particular cards. So say you want to find on setup or on after drawing up, post setup, you want to find the probability of what's the probability that I've got a 2-gold character, or if you want to be more specific, what's the probability that I've drawn a character with a Warcrest for your Warcrest events, or a unique Lannister character for Wheels Within Wheels.
So it's very similar to the hyperbolic calculator we were talking about.
Is that really in Pool and Search? I know.
Well, that's
set up and draw.
You can use the Pool and Search to limit. It's kind of an expansion of the hyperbolic calculator. I'd say the spreadsheet's set out fairly logically, but there is a bit of back and forth because why not? If you can do it, if it's more useful, might as well have it. So in the Pool and Search, you can search cards from whatever restrictions you want, and then from those restrictions, other parts of the spreadsheet will be affected by those restrictions. Also on Pool and Search, one of the comments I've seen on the boards and for deck builders, particularly for new players, that they want to know if you can set your own card pool, in that I myself have only got... I'd say about 70% of the full card pool. I don't have some of the earlier chapter packs. And when I'm typing in, when I'm looking for a card like R.O. Stark or whatever, I can set it using the card pool table so that I don't have this chapter pack. So then when I type in R.O. Stark on the deck tab, search results won't come up with that card. And similarly, if you can import a deck, one of the boards, and you can put it into the deck builder with the card pool table. It'll figure out if you have that card from that chapter pack, so you can kind of get a better idea of what chapter packs you need or don't need to build a particular deck.
This is actually a feature I really like. So that comes up in the fourth sheet in Table 16, and it says Chapter Pack Summary. Yeah. And I really like that. So you can take somebody's deck, import it into the sheet, and then list all the chapter packs you need and how many cards and how important it is essentially for you to get those chapter packs, because sometimes it might just be one or two cards. And it's actually kind of interesting if you import a couple of decks and you realize, hey, I only need 8 chapter packs and 2 deluxes for this one. Thousands of dollars to get into this game. I think this is a good way to cut them back.
Yeah, I think it's awesome for new players, like someone that has a core and a couple expansions, and they want to see if they can make 3 decks, and actually once they use their cards, they can just take their cards out of the pool, and then they're only seeing that subset that's left, which is
It will also help if you share a card pool with friends. I know that some of my friends do that. And similarly with the chapter packs, going ahead of myself, another feature of the spreadsheet is I've included the option to compare 2 decks, meaning that you've made your own deck using the deck tool, or you've imported it or whatever. You can then find someone else's deck. Say you're collaborating with a friend and they think, oh, what do you think of this deck? I've made some changes. What you can do is you can copy and paste it onto the comparison tab. There's a box on the left. You can copy your deck in, and it'll automatically find out what cards you have in common, or what cards that have been added to the deck, removed from the deck, if you've added more copies or taken copies of a card out of a deck. So it'll just highlight what changes you've made in your deck. And with that, it'll also recognize what chapter packs you've used or you haven't used. So the deck that I have at the moment, over about a month, I've made several changes, and I've realized that I essentially don't need the Return of the Others chapter pack for this deck. So if I was buying, I don't think anyone's really buying that many more chapter packs at this stage of the game, but if I was
making collection incomplete, I've still been buying the new chapter packs.
I want the new chapter packs I like. I'm excited for... What's the third one? Veilman? I think that'll be an excellent chapter pack.
Let's maybe go through a few of the results. If I've imported my deck, there's a lot of information available in statistics. Maybe the most interesting to someone like John is the setup and draw area.
So the setup and draw area is probably the most useful part of the sheet.
What I like about it is that it breaks it down. Like, you know, people always say, like, my average setup is 5. But you're actually saying, you know, my cards on setup that are characters are X amount. You know, the locations drawn versus the locations played are X amount for a percentage chance. I love that because I love knowing that not only is my setup going to be, you know, 5 cards, but on average I'm going to have 2 characters. That's a much more interesting and useful statistic for me than just knowing I'm going to have 5 cards.
That's what I was going for. The other feature that I like particularly for the setup is it can find the percentage chance of you getting a hand with the like 2 copies of a unique card.
But, yeah, so this is the same idea as limited or unique cards, any cards that you cannot set up the second version, even though other restrictions might allow you to play it, right?
You just pointed out the one thing I didn't do on the sheet is how many limited cards you draw each time.
I just love poking holes in things completely accidentally. I assure you, I'm not a vindictive person.
He's lying.
A natural talent for finding flaws.
Yeah, overall, I'd say the sheet's pretty much complete, but there are little things like that. And if you find any errors or misspellings of words across the sheet, or things like you haven't figured out how many limited cards you, on average, you get on setup or on a setup hand. Those kind of things. Point that out to me. I'm I'm pretty much finished with all the features of the sheet, but I do have plans for the future to make it better.
So there's one last thing that I want to touch on, and this is this Table 3 setup preferences.
The now, setup preferences in what I've done is I've made my own – to get all this information, I've had to make a pretty advanced little table for each setup. And with each setup table, everything's based on cost. So obviously, if I'm playing you're better off playing five one-cost cards than playing 1 5-cost card. But with the setup preferences, you can kind of go a little bit further than what the Mad Huntsman's setup analyzer does, and that might say your average amount of cards played on setup is 4 cards. But say if you do have a knights deck, obviously you want to be playing knights on setup versus a
non-knight given equal.
Say a location on setup. Similarly, you're more likely to want to play economy cards on setup or cards that provide draw on setup like Golden Tooth Mines than something that doesn't. So what would the,
presumably with you're the, less likely to want to play a Jorah with the come into play effect, or a dragon
exactly.
or a dragon knight kind of thing.
So you can kind of go into it, put in your own play style. So if you are more likely to play locations on setup for a first turn valor or whatever, that's not a very good play. Basically, you can the setup preference is you can put numbers against what cards you prefer to play. So I think on the example spreadsheet that I've got up there, I've set the setup preference of the new Ancestral Home, Danny. I've set that to 4 compared to something in the Long Lances, which I've set to be 0, with 0 being I don't want to play that on setup. And similarly, if I really want Danny down on setup, I can set the setup preference to be 5, which is all stated on the sheet. So that'll set it so
if you have one, you'll play it regardless of any other parameters.
Yeah, it'll play it regardless of, say, it might be better for you to play other 3 1-cost cards versus 1 Daenerys.
So you mentioned a little bit about the future of this spreadsheet. You said that you're fairly happy with most of the features. Obviously, you'll be keeping it updated for new cards as Octagon updates them as well. But do you think this is the kind of thing that will be portable to something like Game of Thrones 2.0? Do you think this is something that we could be using in the long term?
I do have plans to make it work for 2.0. I think, obviously, I need to type in all the card information, unless I can get it from Darkspurn. But I'm more than happy on doing that. I probably won't be able to do it as soon as the game comes out. It might take me a week, but I intend on doing it. I think it'll make, as you've said on your podcast, you kind of want to make the best of the new reboot. So you're trying to make, like, your podcast, you go over things new players can do and old players can do. I think with this sheet, if we started off from the beginning, with the more, I'd say, advanced deck information that it can provide, I think it will make the game overall better, make more easy to deck build. So I do plan on implementing it for 2.0. But the main thing that I think I might have said it on the Card Game DB post, but I've got this idea in I'm going through every card and I'm kind of giving each card its theme. So if you've got a card like No Quarter, I'm putting that it's got a kill effect on it. So if you've got a card like Street of Sisters, I'm putting down that it's an economy card, only works with power icons. So I'm going through the whole card pool very slowly, I might add, and I'm trying to flesh it out so that when you do import your deck, it'll tell you, hey, I've got 30 knights in my deck for whatever reason, and I've got 10 cards that are affected by the knight trait, or I've got 15 Warcrest cards, and then I've got 7 cards that are affected by Warcrests. So I'm kind of advancing. I'm kind of
expanding
myself a lot of work. Expanding, yeah. I'm expanding the sheet, so it's a bit more.
Maybe.
I'd say it's more useful. Because it's
I think this is something that's likely to be more easy with Thrones 2.0 because you're going to
way less cards.
You're going to start off with all of the cards, and you're going to be able to say, okay, there are 250 cards or however in the first core, and you're going to be able to say, you know, narrow down the themes a little more easily and not have to go through, you know, 7 years of cards. I know that there's generally when a new tool is introduced, it takes a while for it to get adopted, but this is the kind of thing that once you get used to the import system and, you know, clearing previous data, which can be a little bit finicky for people who aren't used to that kind of thing, but once you're used to it, it can save you a lot of time.
Originally, I had an AdFly link that was supposed to tell you, like, what countries people were downloading things from.
Mm-hmm.
So when it came out, the problem with the AdFly link is everyone uses some form of ad blocker, so it doesn't work.
Yep.
You don't get any money through that anyway. I don't suggest you use it. I knew I wasn't going to get anything because you only get like a micro dollar per 1,000 views or something bullshit like that. But anyway, when I posted it first, I got about 500 downloads within like, I think it was 3 days. And I got it. It was from all around the world, at least 40 different countries.
Well, that's actually that's more downloads than our podcast ever gets. So now I'm kind of jealous.
I wanted to get some good stats because I know you like stats, obviously. But AdFly didn't work. I now have about 1,500 downloads overall across different versions.
Well, I don't know if you have anything else specific you want to add. I'd definitely like to thank you for taking the time to talk to us about it, to walk us through this, but mostly for taking the time to do this and contribute this to the community and maintain this. So, John, I was really hoping that with a new agenda, we would pick, you know, the first person to win a tournament with a Lufin apart and bring them onto the show. And now I'm really disappointed.
You're disappointed because it was me or just disappointed in general?
I'm a disappointed person in general. But yeah, this means we don't get a guest. This means I just have to talk to you.
I'm not going to be that exciting either because I took a deck that we talked about on the show. I didn't tweak it. I played it twice, and I took it to a tournament, and I somehow managed to win against what I think was a very strong field. So I don't know what happened.
I mean, this deck has been talked about as well on the other cast because I believe Aaron Glazer took it to the Winds of Winter in Boston. Is that right?
Yep, he took almost the exact same deck. I think there was like 3 cards different to Winds of Winter in Boston, and he was very high in the Swiss and then lost to Dennis in the cut when Dennis did a 7-card flop. And that's what he's blaming for his loss.
We talked briefly about this deck, and we'll be posting the deck list or linking the deck list as well. So this was the one that you described in our cast talking about Lufin apart, where you had all these armies and yep. Bannerman as your restricted?
With a little bit of summer in there for draw and just to make the consistency a little bit more easygoing because you have to make sure that you can get to those bannermen to get going.
So did you go undefeated? Did you lose some matches?
No, I lost 2 matches in Swiss. One of them was just I was outplayed. Celine dropped Fear of Winter turn 2, and I remember thinking to myself on Totura, okay, I'm going to be able to play, you know, 3 armies. I'm going to be owning now. You know, turn 1 wasn't that great, and then he played Fear of Winter, and I just looked down and went, oh, man, I think I've lost the game.
he was playing a Tar, Dark Wings, Dark Words. You just don't expect Fear of Winter in that deck.
He was playing Tar, Lufin apart, actually.
We're talking Lufin apart. I still don't expect Fear of Winter in that deck.
I was not expecting Fear of Winter at all, and he was very happy to play it and look at me and kind of laugh. But he was playing an extremely aggressive, high-claim Lufin apart using the new Drogo as well to be able to get kind of some military claim through power challenges and stuff, and Danny, of course. And so it was a good deck. I mean, he played it well, and there was a lot of saves in there as well. So luckily I had He Calls It Thinking when we got the rematch in cut, so I was able to be prepared for the Fear of Winter, and that makes all the difference.
And your other loss?
My other loss was to another Targ, this time to Dark Wings, Dark Words, I want to say, and it was just a horrible setup. It was like a 2-card setup for me, which is super uncommon for that deck. I just got rolled from turn 1, so it wasn't having trouble actually remembering the match. Yeah, I feel bad for whoever I played. I'm sorry. But I had a great match against Dark Wings, Dark Words in the top 4. Targaryen, Dark Wings, Dark Words. It was back and forth, and there's a lot of potential in that deck. The player played it very well. and we played probably 7 plots before I won, and it was just a matter of me being able to draw so much more than my opponent that I was able to win. And then in the final, I played Peter, who was playing a Stark No Agenda, using the new Raven to get some additional draw from Sam, and standard Stark stuff, Mirror Reed, you know, Northern Cavalry flank. And I think going into it, he figured that he'd have the advantage since I relied on Summer for some of my draw. But really, that deck doesn't rely on Summer for its draw. It relies on Sam to get it going, and then, of course, the Bannerman and stuff like that to hold it. So once I had Sam in play, it was getting so bad that he was forced to actually go search out Ygritte with Summon to be able to take my Sam to shut down my draw, because he wasn't able to play his own Ravens. And then once he had my own my Sam, he still wasn't able to claw his way back. It was too late by that point.
So how did it play out relative to what you were expecting? So, for instance, how much of a drawback was the prize? Did you see the meta play anti-aloof and apart cards that we were talking about in that cast in that first episode?
Yeah, so no one actually played Baron A. I think people in Ottawa and Montreal are just a little sick of it. You know, the Montreal meta was the meta that helped build the world Baron A with the French meta, and they played it all at Worlds. So I think they kind of took a step back and said, you know, we're not going to play that deck that we played at Worlds already. We'll play different things. And they came with a bunch of varied decks, very strong, all of them. But no one played Baron A.
And do you think Baron A is a serious problem for this deck?
I think a well-built Baron A running Men of Pride in order to clear
no attachments
is a big problem with that deck, for sure. I think it's a problem for any deck. I mean, I still think the two best decks are probably Baron A, Lannister, Dark Wings, Dark Words, followed up by the deck that you took, Alex, with the Targaryen Black Sails. And I think any of those three decks would still give this deck a hard time. Now, I think this deck would still have a chance against many of those decks. However, I chose to play Men of Pride in this aloof and apart in order to reduce the amount of power people could get from Valor. I was a little bit worried of people, you know, being able to early game get 8 or 9 power and then doing a well-timed Valor to accumulate enough to be able to clinch the win that turn. So I decided that I'd run Men of Pride. I would just be careful against any Baron A I ran into. And I also kind of thought that Montreal wouldn't be bringing Baron A since they took it to Worlds. And they're a meta that likes to try new things and kind of play a little bit outside the box.
Especially for store championships.
It's not as serious as a regional or a national or something. You know, a store championship, I'm hoping people are taking good decks, but ones that they really enjoy playing and not ones they've already won with.
So how did the prize work out? I mean, obviously you did very well, but on average, how much prize power were you giving away?
It was amazing. Very little. You know, you're always claiming your chuds for most of the military claim. And then on Valors, I was able to time most of the Valors with either a Power Blood or a Men of Pride to really reduce the power I was giving out. I would say on average, maybe 2 prize power per opponent was what I would give out.
See, one of my concerns, and I didn't mention it last time, is that seizing the prize can actually be pretty devastating. Because they're going to double that prize power, and but no one was playing that or some of the other things you were worried about, like First Snow Winter?
Yeah, no one played First Snow, and I was actually really worried of First Snow. It's strange to say in a deck that has so many big characters that First Snow would be something you'd fear. But because of the way the cost curve had to be created, there was none of those 3 cost characters that are usually what you use to kind of survive a First Snow. I was really petrified that someone would run a First Snow, bring all those low-cost characters to my hand, and then just take out those high-cost characters with claim. But I didn't run into any First Snow at all, and I don't know if that's just because the meta hasn't adapted to aloof and apart yet, because there hasn't been a lot of people winning with it yet, or just because they couldn't fit it into their plot decks.
Fair enough. Well, that sounds like a pretty early win for Aloof and Apart, very early into its season. I guess we sort of did the same thing with Conquest and Defiance. We had our Nate French interview, and we said, you know, it's the brand new, here's the challenge, and, you know, a week later someone had won. Are you going to be continuing to play Aloof and Apart?
I think I'll try it one more time if I can get out to another SC, but probably not the next one. I'll try something different on the next one for sure.
Well, I'd like to remind our listeners, if they'll cast their minds back, one of our very earliest, I think it might even be our 3rd episode last year, we built a deck on the show. It was a Martell deck. We took it to a store championship, and one of us managed to win that store championship.
You,
this
Alex.
Is basically another repeat, except that it's, you know, you. All right, so we're joined here today by Ingrid, all the way from Spain. Ingrid is a name we may have heard before. Why might we have heard your name before, Ingrid?
I have no idea. No, it's, I think, because I'm Alvaro's girlfriend, maybe?
I think you made a very good impression on a lot of people when you showed up at Worlds in 2013. A lot of people's favorite attendee, I think.
Yeah, I'm unpopular, you know. I'm used to it.
So what brings you to the podcast today?
Well, first of all, I want to say hello to everyone beyond the wall. We got a lot of American friends, so it's a great opportunity to tell them that we miss you, and also to talk a little bit about our tournament, Battle for the Wall.
Batalla por el Muro, Battle for the Wall. So you guys have been running this for how many years now?
This is our fourth year.
Over the previous years, I've seen some of the stories come out of it. I've seen the alternate art cards, which have either been very controversial and beautiful, or beautiful and not controversial. What are you guys going for this year?
For this year, we have actually already released a couple of them, and it's going to be like a second edition of our very famous and controversial and beautiful pinups. This time, it's going to be like new interpretation of it. They're going to be, I think Nacho called them Ladies and Weapons.
Ladies and Weapons.
Yeah.
Ladies are weapons.
Absolutely. Some of the characters will be repeated, others will be new, especially because we have added two of them for the new two factions that we guess are going to be in the second edition of Game of Thrones.
So are you going with the ones that we've seen on the banners? So we're guessing that's Night's Watch and Tyrell?
Yeah, because, I mean, Tyrell is pretty obvious, and Night's Watch is either Night's Watch or Arryn, and we were, you know, we were going for Night's Watch.
Besides, because, the only choice for a woman in Arryn is Lysa, and nobody wants to see her.
No, I don't think so. No, no. I can't really see her on a card, no.
Well, I hope you're right, because it would be unfortunate if you wound up with one of those cards that you can't use. So, Batalla for el Muro is also part of your Ghost to Stalag tour, correct?
Yes, part of the European circuit. I think I don't know how many tournaments are right now, because originally there were four tournaments: Madrid, Milano, Fleabot and Fracas, and Tourney of the Hand. And then we got more tournaments coming in, which is great. That was London last year.
The Blackwater Bay.
Yeah, exactly. And this year we have been joined by the Swedes, which I'm really happy about because I'm half Swede. So it's really cool to have some Swedes with us. Hello, people from Sweden.
Wait, hold on a second. So over the last year, I had constantly referred to the Spanish meta as the strongest meta in the world. And then last year, I almost felt like the Swedes have taken the hat. Are you telling me you're from the two strongest metas in the world?
Yes.
Oh, dear. A force to be reckoned with.
You should be afraid. No, but I think it's Sweden and also the Netherlands are going to have their own tournament. And I think Hungary was some kind of thinking about it as well. So the game's moving a lot in a lot of countries that traditionally didn't have, you know, this huge, big meta. And, you know, that's great because we get to get new friends from different countries and we get to travel to those countries. And so it's really cool.
Well, we've talked a little bit about the history and a little bit about these alt art cards that have been one of the big things to come out of the tournaments, but the tournaments have been very large, they've been very popular, and they've been very popular internationally. So tell us a little bit about what's planned for this year.
It is the weekend of the 13th of March. And what do we expect? I think the thing that we expect every year is just, you know, a bunch of people coming here and having a lot of fun together. It's a little bit difficult to try to see what's going to happen because, you know, first year we would never expect so many people coming together. We had, I think, around 80, which was a huge surprise. And the second year was around those numbers, too. So, yeah, it was easier to try to figure out how many people were coming. And third year was crazy. We had, like, 130 people coming to the tournament. And that was unexpected. this year, we were expecting around, maybe 100 of players coming to the tournament. Right now, I think we're around 80 or something like that.
And are those mostly Spaniards, or are those...
Actually, no. Almost one-third of the players come from abroad, which is amazing, you know?
That's fantastic, yeah.
It's crazy. We have people coming from all over Europe, and that's great. Mm-hmm. And we're really honored.
Yeah. So this is in Madrid?
Yeah, it is in Madrid, in the very center. It's the same location from the last year.
So how would people sign up for this tournament? And who would they contact to try and find out information for lodging and things like that?
Well, I think the easiest thing is just the way you fill on in your application is through our website. Okay, let me see if I can see this. www.juegodetronos.com/batallaporalmuro.
So we'll have that link as well for those of you who can't decipher a Spanish pronunciation. But we will, so we'll add that to the description of the cast as well.
Thank you very much.
Perfect. Well, try reading that in English. It doesn't really work.
No.
Juego de Tronos. No, it's just, it's too painful.
Batalla por el muro.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Well, I see you've been to the U.S. then.
Yeah, I've lived there, so I know what I'm talking about.
Perfect. All right, well, is there anything else that you'd like to add for this tournament or anything pertaining to it?
No, we just that, we hopefully will have a great time as every year, because one thing that we're really proud of is that everyone that comes to the tournament, first thing they say is like, they feel like home almost, because, the ambiance, that's great. The people have a great time and it's very friendly. We go out to dinner together. We go partying together. We get drunk together. And so, it's a way of really keeping in contact with friends that we don't get to see a lot during the year, because we live in different countries. So really anyone that wants to come will be very welcome, and feel free to get in touch with us.
Okay, well, thank you, Ingrid, very much for doing this. So closing comments, John. Store championships are in a fury. You have any tournaments coming up this next weekend?
Yeah, but I'm probably not going to make them to any of them because, it's Valentine's Day.
You know what my Valentine's Day's plan are? Go pick up the coffee table we bought. There's romance for you.
I'm going to, take the children away from my wife for minutes.
Minutes. She'll get minutes of respite.
Yeah. That's something.
Ah, listeners, this is what happens when we become old people.
That's romantic, isn't it?
Thank you for listening to Beyond the Wall. If you have any comments or would like to be featured on the cast, please let us know by email at beyondthewallpodcast@gmail.com or through Facebook at Beyond the Wall Podcast. If you've enjoyed the music, check out more of Antti Martikainen's work at the link embedded in the chapter data. See you all next week.
She sounds like a Aeoria with the shoes.
She has an excuse. She's 6 months old. What's Aeoria's excuse?
Just being Aeoria. He doesn't need an excuse. He calls himself the man boy.